evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, March 31st, 2017. SPLM-IO rebels free abducted oil workers but vow to continue disrupting oil production in South Sudan.
We warned them so many times that you please evacuate the place. The government is producing oil and is getting money and is buying the arms. He is now killing our innocent people. And you know it very well. And everybody knows in this world that they are buying arms and guns. They are killing innocent people.
And a new report says there is strong evidence that government forces burned villages in Yei and carried out other ceasefire violations.
We visited that area and our findings of the homes that we saw burned and of all the witnesses we talked to implicated the government forces in the burning of those homes in that area.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The rebels of the SPLM in opposition, loyal to South Sudan's exiled former first vice president Riek Machar, have released three oil workers abducted by the group in oil-rich former Upper Nile states in early March. South Sudan in Focus obtained a copy of a letter dated March 28 ordering the release of two Indian nationals, Mutu Vijay Bhopathi and IS Hussein Jamali, engineers with the DAR, a consortium composed of China's Sinopec and Malaysia's Petronas. Ambrose Edward, a Pakistani national, worked as an operator with South Sudan on SAD services, an investment company, was also released. The SPLM-IO chairman of the National Committee for Energy and Mining, Dak Dup Bichok, confirmed that three oil workers were abducted from the Adar oil fields. He vows that SPLM-IO rebels will continue to disrupt oil production in the former Upper Nile state.
We captured about two engineers from India working in OBC after intensive fighting between our forces and the forces of the government. We took them to our headquarters, which is Pagak. And then on 18th of the same month, we captured the Pakistani from Pakistan during the fighting. We investigated them. After investigations, those of ICRC, they consult us. Then they say, okay, we want to see those people. These are our mandate. We want to see them, if they are alive or dead. And then we allow them to go and see them. They see them. And then these three engineers, we give them phones, and then they contacted their families. They talked to their families so that their families will know that they are alive. We learned that they are innocent people. Their country consult our chairman. They talk to our chairman.
Where are these three oil workers?
Three people now that are released, they are now in Khartoum, so that those of Khartoum will hand them to their families.
Was there any deal for their release? Because the government in Juba was saying that you were demanding some money for their release.
The regime is talking nonsense. We didn't demand anything. We released them without any deal. Because we saw into that they are just workers and their country contacted us. Them, our chairman, see into it. There's no need for those people to be kept. We are not terrorists. We are people fighting for our rights.
These oil workers are not armed. They are not part of the government in Juba. Why would you arrest them? Why would you abduct them?
We warned them so many times that you please evacuate the place. The government is producing oil and is getting money. And he's buying the army so that he is now killing our innocent people. And you know it very well. And everybody knows in this world that they are buying arms and guns. They are killing innocent people. And we told them so many times. We warned them. And we are still warning them so that they leave the place, they leave the production place. And then they stop production.
The government is saying you are capturing oil workers to scare them from going to the oil fields.
We are fighting for our rights. We want oil to go for services of South Sudanese. We want to stop this oil not to work, okay? If they have any power to protect the oil, let them do it. If they don't have, it is our right to do anything to stop the producing of oil in oil fields.
The oil revenue from the country is the only source of income for the government in Juba to help them provide services to the people. If you are saying oil workers should not be there and the oil production should be shut down, that means you are also affecting your own people.
No, this is not true. You are not telling the truth. Our people, half of them, that are in refugees camp in Uganda, in Kenya, in Ethiopia, and in Sudan. Most of them are in UNMISS camps. They are not in their homes. They are displaced. They are being killed by the same government. People in South Sudan are not receiving their money. And this money is going to their pockets and going to buy the arms so that to kill our people. If we have chance to stop this oil production, we will do it. The same government is now claiming, and you want to defend me. You want to defend them.
My job is not to defend them, but I'm just giving you the facts on the ground that this oil, the money that comes from oil is for helping people.
I'm giving you the facts, what is now going on nowadays.
How many oil fields are under the control of the SPLM, SPLAIO?
No, we don't mind. If they are not in our control, we are there with them. And we will do what we want to do.
That's Dark Dupe Bichok, SPLM-IO chairperson of the National Committee for Energy and Mining. He was speaking to me yesterday from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. The ceasefire and transitional security arrangements monitoring mechanism, or CITISAM, says it has compelling evidence that government forces deliberately burned thousands of homes in at least three villages in Yeyu over the past few months, and that the government forces are acting in breach of the cessation of hostility agreement. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
CITISAM says there has been extensive destruction of homes in Lanya, Sansasiri, Morobo, and Lutaya villages in Yei. In Lanya alone, the monitoring mechanism found over 3,000 homes were burned. A monitoring and verification team visited Latuya village 2 months ago and found many homes abandoned and destroyed. A report released by the monitoring mechanism says the level of destruction of burned houses and buildings was so extensive that a monitoring and verification team was not able to accurately identify the extent of the damage in some cases. The visit to Lanya town by investigators in early February found that more than 3,000 homes were burned there, which officials alleged was a result of a natural wildfire that occurred around January 5th. However, a map provided by the Joint Military Ceasefire Commission suggests the homes were destroyed well before early January. Ruth Feeney, a senior communications officer for CITISAM, says they have compelling evidence to conclude that the South Sudan government is responsible for the destruction of homes.
We visited that area, and our findings of the homes that we saw burned and of all the witnesses we talked to implicated the government forces in the burning of those homes in that area.
Defense Minister Kwame Nyong or SPLA military spokesman Luol Rai cannot be immediately reached for comment. The report states that SPLA military commanders blamed the burning of the houses on SPLAIO forces. It also says SPLA military commanders claimed that some of the houses caught on fire during ongoing fighting between government and rebel forces. The report concluded there is compelling evidence that other violations occurred in Yei. It said more patrols are needed in the area to verify those allegations, but they are in places that monitors could not reach. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
A statement released yesterday by Norway, the United States, and the United Kingdom is stressing that the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan is a direct result of the conflict and urges political leaders to end the cycle of impunity in the country. The Troika is demanding that all parties to stop violence committed against humanitarian workers and the obstruction of humanitarian assistance. The three countries stress that military offensives and the obstruction of life-saving assistance must stop immediately. The statement says there is no military solution to the conflict and that a political solution involving all political parties is needed. The Troika adds that President Kiir's national dialogue could offer a platform to address the root causes of the conflict while building a true national consensus, but says the dialogue should not in any way replace the core elements of the 2015 peace deal. Landlords in Torit County say they no longer want tenants to farm their land. They say the tenants cut down trees and ruin their property. The farmers practice shifting cultivation, which means they move from one plot of land to another every session, requiring them to clear new pieces of land. Farmers say the landlord's decision to no longer rent their land will hamper their efforts to produce food and fight hunger. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Torit.
Traditional chiefs in Himodong Epayam, a fertile area located some 15 kilometers south of Torit town, say they will not allow farmers to farm on their land this coming season. Except for those who do not cut down trees or burn charcoal will be allowed to farm. Landowners also accuse farmers of harboring armed men who loot and kill people on the highways. Mary Rufus, a youth in Humodonge, is speaking in Arabic. She says her community need the trees to survive. Our ancestors used to tell us that trees give us rain, Rufus says. She says if there is famine, they collect the fruits and leaves and eat. That is why, she says, they are telling the farmers not to cut the big trees. Abalu Andrew, a youth in Humodonge, says area residents have started feeling the negative effects of cutting down trees by farmers and charcoal burners.
That's why in Humodonge the amount of rain is now reducing due to the issue of cutting the trees down. That's why yesterday we discussed about it. It took us around 2 to 3 hours discussing about the issue of water until the youth come with a solution that we did not actually allow somebody, especially this year, to go and cut the trees because we have got the impacts of it, of the issue of cutting trees, so it has reduced the amount of rain, which can actually cause poverty to the community.
Most residents in the Humodonge area also burn charcoal to earn additional income. Farmer Masmina Mami says she has pleaded with the Humodonge landlords to revoke the restriction. Speaking in Arabic, she says stopping them from cutting big trees is the same as killing them. She says they produce charcoal from these forests and they take to the market to buy food for their children. Mami also says they grow food there to feed their families. But now, how are they going to survive? She questions. She's asking that they are allowed to cut some of the big trees and leave the small ones. Joseph Lonoha, a chief representing the farmers, say the decision will have an adverse impact on all farmers who never ask for any relief aid.
These our people, they are alive in what? In cutting of charcoal. They are looking about for the charcoal only. They are also taking the firewood to the market, so they are surviving with it. So now all the way is now going to close about to cutting the tree. I don't know if the... Maybe my people will be suffer if there are no way, maybe the NGOs or government see about the condition of the people, so the people will be suffer really.
But Humodonge Chief Elia Oboy says that is not their concern. Speaking in Arabic, he says all those who are willing to cultivate in the area must be registered and has to get permission from his community.
Anybody who will be cultivating can only cut small trees for firewood. But big trees should not be cut because these trees are the ones bringing rain. And if they cut, then other set will come. And also without it, the land will not be fertile because it is the leaves which make the land fertile. So we don't want anybody to cut big trees.
Local Stephen is a civil society activist working with Community in Action Group. He says the farmers and the landlords have to come up with a solution that satisfies both sides. Imotongi State Governor Tobiolo Oromo Alberio urged residents at the end of a peace forum in Torit yesterday to grow fast maturing crops in order to reduce hunger in the region. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
About 108 million people around the world faced severe food insecurity in 2016, an increase from 80 million in 2015. That's the finding of a new report released today by the UN, European Union, USAID and others. Conflict and drought are among the main reasons for the increase. The report says the demand for humanitarian and resilience building will escalate this year due to the famine risk in South Sudan, Somalia, Northeast Nigeria, and Yemen. Shukri Ahmad is the Deputy Strategic Program Leader for Resilience at the Food and Agriculture Organization. From Rome, he spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua.
The number of people that are impacted now by the overall disasters, including conflict, has risen to an unprecedented level. So I think this is the main message, and central to this is conflict. It used to always be driving some of the food insecurities in the past, but this time the combination of the different countries happening is actually very central. I think this is the main message coming out.
And the figures, according to the report, show an increase from 80 million people in 2015 to 108 million people last year. That is a dramatic increase.
That is a huge increase. And that increase actually overall is when you see Syria, Yemen, Somalia, which is unabated conflict, now the Lake Chad region, Central African Republic, and all these combined are actually bringing people on the brink of starvation. And the situation now is exacerbated actually in the last 2 years by the El Nino phenomenon. The El Nino phenomenon this year, in some instances, actually, it is in itself a very record-breaking, and some say more than 80 years, but others actually say the combination of it and consecutive seasons of failure of the rainfalls, actually, they say this is a record. It has never happened in such an instance and in such strength.
But the report also says that it expects the situation to get even worse.
This is now worse because the conflict is continuing. However, on the other hand, and we're not yet fully sure, but the forecast of the weather in the next 3 to 4 months are very, very crucial. And some indications are showing that it is already late in certain areas. And if it doesn't come in sufficient quantity this time or in amount, it can really become catastrophic because some areas have lost their livestock, a lot of deaths of livestock in several countries, and this then would simply escalate to the situation. For a lot of them, between March and May is the main season, and then for others, it continues into June, July, and August. So we are really looking to these areas with very big trepidation, and we are very anxious that this may actually turn out to be a very bad year, and that would be catastrophic.
Do you take into account situations like the invasion of the fall armyworms in a number of countries in Africa?
We do that, but that is more or less under control. Some localized damage has been done. However, we have really improved the way countries and the international organizations work in these areas. So the containment more or less are much better, but it needs to improve in its own right. There are certain positive indications in certain parts where we have a very good early warning systems nowadays, and we have now moved into linking these early warning systems to early action. On the other hand, there are some infrastructural developments that countries themselves have done, and Ethiopia is a good example. 1984, actually, there were millions of people affected and hundreds of thousands died from famine. This time around, the actual economic growth and infrastructural growth that was happening in the last several years have helped people even before any assistance came. They simply were going to the next towns easily, which used to be a big difficulty. So there are certain things that we have seen improving, but now it is simply a combined thing that really created this load.
So what about those areas where, okay, you had the early warning for like Somalia and we heard about South Sudan. So what do you do about those situations that are ongoing and you don't have the infrastructure in place to deal with it?
Now we need a huge assistance. What is being done, for instance, in South Sudan is dropping from planes. Actually, in certain areas where it is difficult to get into, it is dropping through planes and making sure that we actually reach out to these people. But wherever we can move through the ground, we are doing it.
How much more easily might some of these problems be solved if there were political solutions in some of these countries?
This is the crux of the matter. I think had we had not these conflicts and problems, this would have been contained already in a way that doesn't require such a huge resource.
That's Shukri Ahmad of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. From Rome, he spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese students who finished their studies in Uganda are vowing to return home to build the country. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when was the last time you did something that made you feel proud?
I founded my private school called Promise College Secondary School, and I'm proud of it because I want to help my citizen in South Sudan.
That was 2015 December when I took a step, because everybody was against journalism, especially in South Sudan. But when I said it is my own belief and my own interest, my own like and my what I love, so why don't I go for it? I shouldn't be listening to what other people say. It should be coming from me. If I want it, I'll have to go for it.
I think a few weeks ago, when I finally managed to balance my life socially and professionally and just get a good work-life, social-life balance.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese students graduating from Uganda's Kampala University say they want to return home and contribute towards the realization of peace in their war-ravaged country. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Hundreds of students, including more than 200 South Sudanese, graduated from various faculties during a ceremony held at Kampala University yesterday. At least 30 South Sudanese students had to drop out of school in Kampala due to financial difficulties. South Sudanese Molokong Gok says he considers himself one of the lucky ones to be among this year's 260 South Sudanese graduates, as conflict and economic turmoil in his country prevented hundreds of thousands of children from even attending school.
So many people back home, they are not graduated. They have not even joined university. So we are so lucky that we have joined university and we have graduated from here.
Gok says he plans to return to South Sudan and help stabilize his war-torn country.
We have so many conflicts in our home, but so after here, we're working together with our brothers, so we go back, we work together, we bring peace to our nation.
Enoch Abanayuel, another South Sudanese graduate from Kampala University, says people at home have suffered enough from wars and conflict. Now that he has graduated, Ayuel says he wants to do his part to end the more than three-year-long conflict.
They are tired of war. And this time is the time for the peace. Young children, young and old, all of them are tired of war. South Sudan itself needs peace. Yeah, and this time is the time for peace. As we are graduating in peace in Uganda here, then that peace we shall take it back home to South Sudan.
Fighting erupted in 2013 after political differences between President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar turned violent, and the conflict quickly spread to other parts of the country, often dividing fighters along ethnic lines. Ayuel says this has not been the case at Kampala University, where South Sudanese are united and live in harmony.
We have an association here in Kampala University of which we all are united. We all are one South Sudanese. We work for the country. So if this spirit will reflect the image of South Sudan in diaspora, this is the spirit of which we shall take back home.
Other Kampala University graduates like Kimo Ezekiel say they too plan to play a part in the peace-building process in South Sudan. Ezekiel says this will not be the first time he works for peace in his country. He says he previously used street theater to promote peaceful coexistence among South Sudanese.
I was head of a drama team. We always bring scenarios, wishes, talking about the peace, how we can unite people, how we can be together as brothers before. So we have been trying a lot, our efforts to try to help.
The economic and financial crisis gripping South Sudan, including hyperinflation, make it impossible for many parents to pay for their sons and daughters' tuition in Ugandan colleges, forcing scores of students to drop out of school. Kampala University graduate Gok says with all the hardships his parents face at home, it was not easy graduating from college.
There's a lot of challenges, but you know, at least we did it and we have got our graduation.
Ayuel, Ezekiel and Gok all say achieving peace in a troubled country like South Sudan is not an easy proposition, but they are determined to find opportunities back home to help develop their nation and in so doing help bring lasting peace to their country. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Apiku in Kampala.
That report by Apiku from Kampala brings us to the end of our show for this week. I guess we have a reason to smile when we hear that South Sudanese are returning home to develop their country. We'll now leave you with a song that is entitled Nyola Dumo, which means a lot of happiness, by a group from South Sudan. We have been listening to that gospel group from Central Equatoria with the song Nyola Duma. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a peaceful weekend, and we hope you can join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.